So, Sherry, tell us about some of the things that you have said yes to in the past that you should have never, ever in a million years have agreed to.
So what are you implying, Amy? Are you suggesting I'm the kind of person who says yes when she shouldn't?
I might be your twin sister.
Okay, so now where do I even start? I mean, my goodness, the list is so long. I suppose, you know, okay, there's two that I can think of real quickly here. One is when I first got to the school I'm at right now, and so I was brand new to the boarding school environment and to supervision and all the extra responsibilities, plus we had just moved and I was in grad school. So, I mean, I was like totally overwhelmed. And then they needed somebody to teach a particular class, and nobody on the faculty stepped forward and said they would do it. And I may well have gone to the vice principal and said, well, if nobody else says yes, I'm sure I could do it. And
I could solve your problem.
I could take your problem and make it mine. It was horrible. I was the worst. It was, I deserved every miserable moment I got for thinking I needed to be the one to go in and be the rescuer. And then, you know, the other one is anything to do with finances. Like, anything that involves that level of detail, just no. Just because I was good at math does not mean I'm good at finances. So anything to do with finances should have just been an automatic no. But I have been the finance person in several volunteer organizations, much to everybody's regret. How about you? What are some things you've said yes to that you should never in a billion years have said yes to?
Well, in chronological order, we could go on for hours, but I said yes to a marriage proposal in college that I should have never said yes to because there were 10,000 red flags that were waving in my face and I was ignoring. But thank goodness God saved me for myself, and I ended up with the right man. That's a God story. But then also the one that I really feel some regret about is that I wanted to help earn some extra money for our family when Anson was born. And so I thought, well, I can take care of children in our home. Oh. I was a teacher. So I took on the care of a baby that was about the same age as Anson. Oh. So I had two babies. It was like having twins. And I was unequipped, unprepared, and ungood. I was not good at it. And I just felt angst all the time because if they were both crying, guess who I wanted to take care of?
Of course.
My baby, right? Yeah. And I just felt guilty and like a horrible person. So thank goodness they moved right before I had to quit. But I should have never said yes to those things.
That's so hard. For those of us who are recovering perfectionists and people pleasers, the yes comes out so easily, followed by regret.
Yes. One of our listeners said something similar. She said, perfectionism and people pleasing leave me overworked, overstressed, overtired, and underproductive, usually from an inability to say no to any request that comes my way and to all the excess work thrown at me by the people who know I won't say no. Oh, gracious, yes. It's so easy to get in this place, and I think we all need some advice about this issue.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're talking to Crystal Stein, author of Holy Hustle, Embracing a Work Hard, Rest Well Life. A self-proclaimed digital missionary, Crystal has always dreamed of her perfect career, climbing the corporate ladder and achieving success. And she did. And then God began redefining hustle, taking Crystal on a journey from striving to serving. From corporate America to nonprofits and freelance work, Crystal understands the tempting pull of striving, but has learned to lean into the blessing of focusing her hustle towards serving God's kingdom.
So if you wrestle with saying yes and no at the appropriate time, Crystal has some wise words for you today.
Well, Crystal, when you put the words holy and hustle together, you know you're going to get some people's attention. Tell us why you wrote Holy Hustle. Tell us about the backstory.
I wrote Holy Hustle because I needed it more than anybody else. It was the message God was working in my life for probably, gosh, more than 2 years now. It's been a long time. It honestly started more than 10 years ago, but the phrase really he put on my heart about 2 years ago when I found myself in the season of striving and I was struggling because I was one of those girls who I never dreamed about my wedding, but I for sure dreamed about my career. Whenever I was little, I was like, oh, I am going to be wearing some cute shoes and walking down the streets of New York. And then I went to New York and realized people don't wear their cute shoes when they walk around in New York. They wear their sneakers and like the cute shoes are in the bag. Like, it's not how it is on the shows. But I always knew I had a heart for work. I wanted to help provide for my family, whatever that looked like. I didn't even necessarily dream about that. I knew like the trajectory that was in my head was I'm going to go to college and I'm going to start a career. And if a family happens to be part of that, then fantastic. If not, okay. And so a lot of that came from growing up with a single mom who worked because she needed to provide for my twin sister and myself. And so I had this example of her work, and my grandmother was a township supervisor, and my great-grandmother owned a Christian bookstore in our town, and my aunt owned a printing store in our town. Now her daughter owns a vintage clothing store. And, you know, all of these women in my life and in my family were working, and they were using the gifts and the talents that they'd been given to support their families. And so that I knew was part of who I was created to be. That was just something I knew about. But I didn't necessarily know how to reconcile, and it took a long time for me to realize I had to, the idea of rest and how to incorporate a Sabbath into all of that. Because my personality is to go, 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 go. You know, I will make it happen. You know, if you give me a task, it's going to get done. If somebody else isn't doing their job, I'm going to do their job for them. So it all gets done. It's like a superhero, right? So, you know, God has given me these talents of, you know, being responsible and organized. And I love a color-coded spreadsheet. And, you know, I'm the dependable one, right? But, you know, like a good superhero, I can use those for good or I can use them for evil, right? Like I can use them to honor God or I can use them to build up my own kingdom. And found myself in this season where I was doing an awful lot of trying to compete and compare and keep up. And I was exhausted and I was burnt out. And I was wondering why things weren't happening the way that I thought they should or in the timing I thought they should. And I realized, okay, so I have these examples of these amazing women who are entrepreneurs in my life and who I follow on social media. And I have these examples of amazing women of faith who on social media are telling me about rest and soul care and grace and all of this. And I'm like, okay, well, I get it. And that sounds amazing. But if I sit in a quiet room with a cup of coffee and a candle, I'm going to fall asleep. So I don't know how that fits. Like, I'm like, I struggle because I feel like I'm supposed to do that. Right. And I'm like, but that doesn't feel like me really either. So it was this journey of saying, okay, God, like, I feel like you created work and rest. I mean, I don't think there's anything that he didn't create or isn't aware of or doesn't have a purpose for. And so why is it that I'm feeling called to work, but I feel guilty if I admit it? And then I also have this desire of my heart to rest, but then I feel guilty when I do that. Like I'm not doing something if I'm resting, right? And so it was this period of my life where I had previously been fired from a job, and then I had to hurry up and hustle and figure out something else. And then I had been asked to resign from a job, and then I had to hurry up and hustle and figure out something else. And I was like, okay, none of this is making sense to me. Like, is this just the cycle I'm supposed to go in? And, you know, why is hustle this word that everybody cringes from so much? And is there something that scripture says about work that can bring these two sides together? Like, is there a balance, which I know that's a tricky word, but is there a balance of work and rest that honors God and isn't about us? And there is. Spoiler alert. God has a few words to say about that.
I love it. Well, you may or may not be describing Amy and me to a T, and probably many of our listeners. So you advocate saying goodbye to striving. So can you help us understand the difference between striving and what you're calling holy hustle? How can we recognize the difference?
So striving is when we make it all about ourselves, right? We do it all in our own strength, in our timeline, with the resources that we have, and we think that we're enough, right? You know, everything tells us, hey, you've got this, girl, you know, you're enough, you can do this. No, we can't. We can't. We're not meant to be enough. That's why we need Jesus. So when we find ourselves striving, it's doing the version of hustle that is the 24/7 trying to compete with people who are doing something that looks similar to you, hurrying up and trying to get your product or your message or your work out there before somebody else does so they don't steal your credit or your thunder, right? So striving makes it about us. Holy hustle makes it about God and about serving others. So the competition aspect of that turns into what Romans 12:10 tells us, where we're to outdo one another in showing honor. So it's not about doing more or doing the most or doing it better than anybody else. It's about using the gifts and the time and the talents that we have to honor God with our work, which means knowing what parts of the job are not ours to do. And it's about outdoing one another in honor. So it's looking around us at the women God's put in our lives, at our actual neighbors, right? The people who live beside us or go to our church or shop in the same grocery store or sit in the carpool line. You know, it's how do we honor them? How do we love them? How do we pull their gifts and talents out so we can work together to build God's kingdom instead of striving to build one that's all about us?
Okay, great distinction. You then also say when we stop striving and start serving, we begin to trust God to harvest what we're faithfully planting. Could you share an example from your own life of what that looks like?
Yes. So whenever I have been in a season of striving, trying to put it all together for myself, I tend to just sort of steamroll over all of those small moments that God has planned for me to notice, right? Those moments where I could be investing in a relationship, or I could be teaching my daughter something about the way that work shouldn't be all-encompassing in our lives, right? That we can take time to rest, that she's not an interruption to what I'm doing, but that, you know, she's an important part of the work that God's given me. And so when I'm striving and I'm trying to just go all the time, I'm missing out on these moments where I can have a life that really shows faith in action, right? And so we can plant those little seeds. So whenever I'm serving, I may never see the results of this harvest that, you know, is happening in the lives of the people I'm impacting, you know, because we all have influence. We are all called to, you know, go and make disciples. So if you believe in Jesus, you have influence and you're a leader because you've been given a commission. So if I'm so busy worrying about my own stuff and building up my own platforms and making it about me, then I'm missing those chances to maybe even in small, ordinary, just everyday faith, just serving God kind of ways to plant those seeds that maybe somebody will see my life and my work as being a little different, and maybe they'll wonder why, and maybe they'll see Jesus in the work I do or the way I interact with them or the way that we allow somebody else to go first, right? Or, you know, the things that are just different, you know, even if it's letting somebody go ahead of you in the grocery store line, right? That doesn't happen that much anymore. And that can be just something that makes somebody realize, oh, there's someone kind here who maybe cares about people a little bit more than I thought. When we do that, when we take the time to slow down and we stop assuming we have to do it all and that it's all our responsibility, then we can rest and we can take that time to really be invested in the people around us. And I think that that really does plant a harvest for God to be able then to come in and, you know, shine through those parts of ourselves that we're willing to admit are weak. You know, when we say we can't do something or we say that it's a struggle for us to do something, God can shine through that because when we're honest about that, that we're not enough, but that we need to rely on God every day to be that strength and to give us that energy or the passion or the desire or just the courage to do whatever it is he's calling us to do, then people can start to recognize that we're giving God the glory for anything that happens good out of it, right? And so he can get a moment to shine through our weakness whenever we're willing to just slow down and say, listen, it's not all about me and it's not all about what I can do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you've brought up the whole concept of comparison, which is one of the biggest struggles for those of us who are reforming perfectionists, and you admit to struggling with jealousy. So we would love to hear your practical advice for fellow jealousy and comparison strugglers, which again, Amy and I fall in that camp, and I know that many of our listeners wrestle with this as well.
Oh, I'm so relieved. I thought you were going to have me share about, you know, who makes me jealous.
This is way easier. Oh no, this is not a tell-all show.
Well, it could be if you want to share.
I mean, listen, open book, right? No. I feel like that might distract from the message a bit. I think it really, this is something that I have for a very long time struggled with. And I don't know if it's because I have an identical twin sister. And so there was always this level of trying to somehow, you know, stand out as different while looking exactly the same as someone else, or, you know, but also being an introvert, so not really wanting the spotlight on me, but hey, pay attention to me, but not really, just could you do it subtly, but like not actually, you know, tell anybody you're doing it, because if you make a big deal, then I'll feel super embarrassed. I'm such a complicated mess sometimes, but my poor husband, I'm like, how do you ever celebrate anything for me? Because I'm like, oh, yay, no, oh, yeah, no, I want a big thing, but I don't. he's just confused all the time. Bless his heart. But, you know, it is something that I think because, you know, with the internet, which, listen, I'm going to just say right now, social media is my favorite thing, and I really truly see it as a missions field. I think that Christians can have such an impact when we share the good news of the gospel. Right? We're called to go do that in all corners of the earth, into like dark corners of the world. And I mean, the internet, come on now. I mean, if there's not a better missions field, I don't know. I don't know what it is. You know, so there's such good that God can use there. But it's also a place where we really have to guard our hearts, because unlike, you know, our grandparents' generation or great grandparents' generation, where they lived in a community and they knew those people, but they lived in a community of maybe what, like 120 people that they knew, and they got to be the best at something, right? Like they were the teacher, the doctor, the farmer, the whatever, like they had their role and they were the one that did it there. And in the next town over, there was somebody else that did it, but they never really cared about what the person in their town was doing because they had to take care of the people in their town. And so now we go on Instagram and I'm like, well, there's 800 women who do exactly the same thing I do. And I don't feel special and I don't feel like I'm doing a good enough job because look at all these things they're being given and everybody looks like an overnight success. But that's not what we're created to do. That's not how community is meant to work for us. And so being able to recognize, listen, the internet is amazing. Instagram is a fantastic tool for inspiration and encouragement and to connect with people. But when God calls us to use our gifts somewhere, he's given us a specific spot. He calls us to a place and he calls us to a season of life where we're supposed to interact with people. And so whenever I'm able to look at, all right, God has called me to a very small town in South Central Pennsylvania. This is where I live. This is where I go to church. This is where my daughter goes to the same elementary school that I went to when I was little. And it's where my husband teaches elementary school. Like this is the place God's given us. It's not a mistake, you know? And yes, I have the resources to be able to reach women all over the world because of Facebook, whatever. And that's okay. And I can be faithful in those spaces too, to share what God's doing in my life, but he's calling me to serve here. And so whenever I can be content in this space and know, listen, God didn't make a mistake with the gifts he gave me, with the place I'm in, with the people he's put in my life, I can start to view the women in my life who are doing similar things as co-workers in the kingdom, right? Like we are all serving our people in our place together so we can go and take the good news of the gospel further than we ever could on our own. We can feel confident that this job that God's given us, whether we are keeping small children alive or delivering mail or making coffee or running meetings in boardrooms or whatever that looks like, right? Like that, none of that is a mistake. That all serves a purpose. We were meant to honor God with our work on purpose and right where we are. And we can start to really honor other women through that. And you can't honor somebody and encourage somebody and also be envious of them. Mm. Because your brain cannot function in those two spaces. Mm-hmm.
So good.
I love how practical that is.
And the follow-up to that is this, from a quote from your book, you said, "Holy hustle means learning to say no and learning to ask others for help." So I hear you're already talking about connection, and now you're talking about saying no and asking others for help. So number one, help us. So how do we say no? Do you have any tips on that?
Yes, it's very easy. You say no.
Oh,
end of sentence. No.
This is the number one question we get from our listeners, is how to say no.
I know, because you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I get it. So I've had women in my life who have taught me this, right? I needed to have a mentor, right? I needed to watch other women do this well and be able to see that, oh, wait, when they say no, that doesn't mean it's the end of the road for them. God's not done with them just because they said no to one opportunity. It meant that they were abiding with God. They were spending time with him, and they knew his heart well enough to know that he had something planned for them that would be so good and so great that they could say no to whatever this was, whether it's ending a season of life or ending a season of work or ending a hobby or whatever it was. Like, they could say no and make room in their lives so that God could bring something new in. And maybe that was just a season of rest, right? Maybe they were saying no to something so that they could rest, maybe learn something new and get ready for the next thing God was giving them. Our fear is if we say no, then no one's going to see us as important or essential, or we're not going to feel needed, right? Like, we want to feel needed. We want to feel important and seen and valued. And when we put all of that in how much other people are asking us to do, we're just going to be exhausted. Knowing that, okay, if God is asking me to step out of the season and he's asking me to lay something down for him or say no to something that's being offered, it's because he has something else in mind. It's not because he's done. It's not because there's nothing left, you know? And I think that once we become comfortable knowing who we are in Jesus, that we are valued, that we are chosen and loved and made holy, and that he welcomes us, and we can be broken and not enough, and all of that before him. And we don't have to say yes to everything. We can confidently say no. And if we're doing that other part, right, we're connecting and investing in the lives of the women and the people around us to know how God's made them, then we can start to be somebody who connects them with those opportunities. So when we say no, it's a yes for someone else. When we say no to a speaking engagement, or we say no to, you know, helping decorate something, or no to being on a committee for the 80th year, or being on the president of the PTO, whatever it is, you know, whatever somebody is trying to ask you to be part of, if it does not feel like something God is immediately asking you to say yes to, because you know that, right? Like, you know, somebody asks you to do something and you're either like, yes, I am all in, or you're like, ooh, I really need to find a way out of this. If it's not that first one, like, maybe stop and say, God, is this where you want me? And if it's not where you want me, will you help me maybe be aware of who might be the perfect fit for this? Because then we can outdo one another in honor, right? So we're not only recognizing what other people are good at, but then we're using our no to make a space for a yes for somebody who might be truly thrilled for that opportunity.
So one of the things that I find with my community, Sensitive and Strong, is that a lot of women who are highly sensitive, they want to serve, but they can't serve in some of the traditional ways because the big crowd, the glaring lights, the big noises are literally not just overwhelming, but overstimulating for them. And so I was wondering if you had some ideas of ways that women can serve that are perhaps a little smaller, or if nothing else, a little quieter than the ones that get so much attention.
Yes. And I think that the ones that get so much attention are wonderful, but there are so few spots available for those. But there's so much that has to happen behind the scenes to make that all happen seamlessly, right? So whether it's being part of a prayer team, right now, one of the things I do is I'm the communications coordinator for our church. And so I get to see a lot of the behind the scenes that happens. We have a pretty big church. And so, you know, we do video announcements instead of on stage announcements. Well, for me, that's really fun because being on stage isn't really my thing. I mean, I'll do it if God asks me to, But if I can read off of a teleprompter and have it just be me and one other person, and then they make me look amazing and edit me, well, then fine. You can absolutely use that. Or, you know, we have a wonderful prayer team that is always available to meet with people. We have people who just come in and help fold bulletins, or we have people that take care of all of the landscaping here. You know, if you love gardening, how can you volunteer to maybe help serve a community garden in your neighborhood? Or, you know, maybe you love reading, maybe start a little free library that, you know, no one actually ever even has to see you at it. You just put books in it. I think that there are so many ways that we can honor God with our gifts. If you love to write, maybe you just volunteer to write a newsletter or an article, you know, for your church or for your community, maybe a cause that you're passionate about. You can go online and find different places that maybe it's something like Compassion International, where you can use your gift to, you know, help write letters to kids that don't receive letters from their sponsors. That's something I've done before, and it's an amazing opportunity. So you can really love these kids around the world, but you don't necessarily commit financially to it, and you're not going out speaking about compassion, but you're doing that part that tells a kid around the world that somebody loves them and sees them. You know, once we start to realize, okay, listen, this is something I really love to do, we maybe let other people know about it, right? Say, I love helping people get organized. You know, I wonder if there's anybody that could use that. Well, absolutely. There are tons of people who would love for you to, you know, maybe work as a virtual assistant and organize their email inbox, or just delete all the junk emails. I have done that for people before. It's essential, you know, or just responding to emails for people. That is a completely behind the scenes task, but something people need help with, because it can get very overwhelming, right? Honestly, volunteering anytime you can to help maybe a single mama, you know, maybe you watch her kids so she can have a moment to go be with girlfriends or go to a Bible study or something. You don't have to teach the Bible study. You know, you can just maybe offer to watch somebody's baby for a little bit so that that mama can go get a break. I think there's all kinds of ways that we can serve that are smaller and maybe unseen to most of what the world would think is big and fancy. But listen, God doesn't make mistakes when he puts those opportunities into your life. And if he has created you to be compassionate and empathetic, there's so many things we can do that don't require spotlights or crowds or any of that, but that honor God with what he's given us to do.
I love it. So creative.
Crystal, would you give our listeners a parting word of encouragement?
Yes. The most encouraging thing that I would want you to take away from all of this is to know that the way that God has created you to do work for his kingdom doesn't need to look like what anybody else does. And the way that he has created you to rest doesn't need to look like what anybody else does either. Spend time in his word long before you ever spend time in anybody else's how-to or, you know, a help book, and know how he has created you, and walk confidently knowing that where you are and how you are created is not a mistake, and you have good work to do for God's kingdom.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode117.
There you'll find our transcript, this week's Digging Deeper download, the Bible verse art, and directions about how to enter this week's giveaway of Holy Hustle.
We are so grateful to our Grit and Grace growth partners. You can learn more about how to become a Grit and Grace growth partner at patreon.com/gritandgracegirls. We would love to have you join our team.
Make sure that you join Sherry and I next week when we process together what we learned from Crystal.
For today, grow your grit, embrace God's grace, and when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.